trees and plants are feeling the strain as we experience one of the worst droughts in quite some time. Today, a look at what we can do to help our ailing trees. It's Talk of Iowa, and it's Horticulture Day. I'm Jeff Schmidt, in for Charity Nebbe. DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh is here to discuss assisting newly planted trees and what to do with established trees. We'll talk about watering and mulching, and Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will answer all of your lawn and gardening questions. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Jeff Schmidt, in for Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day, and there's more evidence that the nation's drought is getting worse at a faster rate. The latest Drought Monitor report released yesterday says the prospects for even short-term relief are now being described by experts as grim and still months away. Today on Horticulture Day, a focus on what we can do to help our trees that are feeling the strain from the heat and lack of moisture. My guest today, here with me in the Iowa City studio, is DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good.
And in our Ames studio is Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. Good morning to you, Richard.
Good morning.
Well, gentlemen, where do we start here? Obviously, we've been talking about the drought for some time. Mark, what are you seeing out there as far as some of these trees that are dealing with drought?
One word, stress. Yeah. Seeing a little stress. We got to remember that water is a key component to plants, all plants. Water is important in cell structure. It's important in cell development, elongation, growth, the transport of minerals. It's very key to the life of those plants. I'm starting to see quite a few species, especially species that love water, things like silver maple, river birch, cottonwood. Some of those are starting to show some symptoms. Some of the symptoms you tend to see might be scorching on the leaf edges, wilting, actual leaf drop. Trees will tend to try to acclimate towards the conditions. They will drop a lot of their inner leaves first. Those will actually turn yellow. This morning on my walk to work, I noticed a lot of yellow cottonwood. Box elder's another one that likes water if those species are high and dry. But even some of the other species that do well in dry conditions are starting to look a little off. The thing that we don't want to confuse with drought conditions, especially in the eastern part of the state, we talk about brown leaves and those kind of things. We also have another situation called the Japanese beetle that's causing a lot of leaves to fall off and be brown. So you need to kind of make sure what symptoms you're seeing and what is actually causing the potential problems. There's a lot of linden out there or basswoods that are really brown and look sick and kind of look drought stressed, but that's actually related to the Japanese beetle. There are even some birch that are that way too, some crab apples and others. So you kind of have to look at the two. The other kind of concern is once we see wilt, sometimes that tree or plant is going the wrong direction.
What are some mistakes people may make as they pull the trigger on something just when they start the trees start to deteriorate?
Well, I think the biggest thing we can do is, or the wrong thing we can do is, we can actually overwater, believe it or not, even in a drought. If we have soil conditions that are, depending on the size of tree that you're planting and those kind of things, if we have soil conditions that are rather clay and you're watering every single day and you're never allowing that soil profile to, if it's staying saturated 100% of the time and you're not letting it dry out a little bit, on certain plants, you may actually overwater. So we have to be careful that we get them enough water, but that we also don't. In a sandy soil, again, a lot of times it depends on your soils. You may not be able to overwater in these situations, but you got to be careful in the quantities that you water to.
When we talk about these trees and lack of water, what about where to water the tree? Is that important about where you apply the actual water to the surface or specifics?
Yeah,
of the tree?
And it really comes down to, and Richard can yell at me or whatever when I am incorrect here. But generally, you know, I think we feel if you have a tree that you've planted in the last 2 years, that tree really should be watered. If you want to help that tree to survive and keep it going, those trees need to be watered if it was planted this year or last year. The thing you got to think about those trees is you really want to concentrate that water where that root ball is. So you know what size a root ball went in that ground. So if it was a 2-foot or a 3-foot root ball, you need to just water that root ball in the first year and probably into the second year. So you need to really focus that on that root ball. And on those newly planted trees, depending on the soil conditions, you may be watering 2, 3, 4 times a week in these dry conditions because you're really just watering that root ball almost like it was still in the nursery, which they would probably be watering every day. Again, you need to be careful that if you have a clay soil and you're watering that so much that that water's percolating back up and that root ball is just sitting in water, you want to avoid that. But you can kind of figure out when you soak that root ball, stop, and then rewater again. So on those, you're probably going to want to water every couple of days. And in some cases, if it's a real kind of sandy or light mix in that ball, and you can kind of get your finger in there and feel what it was when you planted it, that's probably going to need water a lot more often. If you have a bigger tree, and in general, I tend, if there's trees that have been in the landscape for 5 years, 3 to 5 years, if you have enough water available to you and there's not a restriction at this point, those trees would also benefit. With those, you would start kind of towards the trunk, but with a 3 to 5 year old, you're going to want to start moving out towards the edge of the branches and start focusing the water in what they call the drip line and move that water out a little bit and try to soak that whole area. And on bigger trees, you basically want to start at the drip line, kind of go in and out a little bit and kind of stay away immediately from the trunk.
We've been talking about if water is available, what are some options if they're in a city or an area where there's restrictions in place and those trees are needing to drink?
Well, hopefully some people, and there's a lot of people out there that collected what rainwater we had when it did come, so people maybe still have sources like that. The other thing we can look at is hopefully a lot of folks, especially in these newly planted trees, have mulched them, and that mulch should be 2 to 4 inches thick out to the edge of the branches at a minimum. That'll help conserve moisture. On the bigger trees, though, I think they're on their own. You know, I think we have to think about conservation. Even if you have the water, I think now is the time to think about it and say, well, let's concentrate on the smaller trees, the newly planted trees, and try to get them through. And these, a lot of these bigger trees, some of them 100 years or older, have been through a lot of conditions. I think we really need to focus on the younger trees and try to save the water. And if you have a bigger tree and you have a water source that you could use, the water is not going to hurt. It's going to definitely help. But you need to think about the about conserving also.
Richard, want to bring you in the conversation if possible. Do we apply any different pruning techniques when the dryness becomes an issue?
I don't think I'd do any pruning at this point. I guess I'd be inclined to wait and put that off until maybe late winter, early spring of next year. So the main thing would be probably just stay away from that. The pruning itself is stressful, so I would be inclined just to put that off until next year.
We have an email from Daryl that's right along the lines of what we're talking about. I have 2 pear trees in my backyard. Earlier this summer, I noticed that one of them had a lot of blackened leaves at the tips of branches. Now most of the outside branches are covered by black leaves, which are falling. There's new growth coming from the same branches. The other pear tree doesn't seem to be affected. What's going on, Daryl asks.
Now, that could be fire blight, which is a bacterial disease very common on pears. It attacks the foliage and the new growth, and the affected leaves dry up and turn dark brown to blackish. They typically don't fall off. They remain on the shoot. the shoot itself also kind of shrivels and kind of droops over. So it kind of looks like a shepherd's crook or a cane. And very, very common on pear and some apples. It is a bacterial disease. A fungicide would not do any good. Typically, one way to cope with that is to go out and prune off the affected branch and prune down several inches before below the actual symptoms to make sure you have it all. And when you do that, after each pruning cut, go ahead and disinfect the pruning shears.
The other possibility, Jeff, too, is depending on where those each tree was this spring, we did have a lot of frost damage on trees, too. So there could have been some initial frost damage on some of those early leaves, too.
We also have an email here regarding the drought. We need the advice of your guests to help us to try to determine when we need to water our lawn. Many of our neighbors have irrigation systems. We do not. I decided years ago that if Mother Nature wants my grass to be green, she will water it. I know that if no rain falls for several days or weeks, that the grass will go dormant. Our question is just how long can we let the grass go until it actually dies? That's from Bruce.
Right. Typically, when the grass turns brown, the actual grass blades, the plant is dormant. The blades are dead, but the actual roots and crown are still alive. At that point, the grass is dormant. And it can typically stay dormant for around 4 to 5 weeks and not be destroyed. So it can remain dormant for quite some time. But if you have a prolonged drought, let's say 5 or 6 weeks, and it's been dormant, then possibly at that range it may actually die. So we typically suggest if you allow it to go dormant that you maybe start watering maybe 5 weeks after it has entered dormancy. And put on like an inch of water, and then come back in another week and put on another inch, and the grass should green back up.
Hey, my neighbor told me that I should avoid any fertilization when the trees are under heat stress. Is that true?
Well, I'm not a big fan of fertilization unless a tree is showing some type of actual nutrient deficiency in the first place. Our trees tend to do pretty well even in some of our rough urban soils, but definitely this would be the wrong time of year to be initiating any type of new growth.
Mark Vitas, DNR District Forester, and ISU Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron are with us. You can join the conversation as well. The number to call is 866-780-9100. That number again is 866-780-9100. You can email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk and also post something on our Facebook page. Jeff Schmidt in for Charity Nebbe. Charity will be back next week, but we still want to hear from you today. It's Horticulture Day, and this is Iowa Public Radio. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Horticulture Day. Jeff Schmidt in for Charity Nebbe. Mark Vitas and Richard Giron are with us to answer all of your questions. And the phone lines are lighting up. Many questions today on this Hort Day. Let's begin with David in Iowa City. David, welcome.
Hi there.
Welcome.
Thank you. I have an ash tree, and my yard has a little bit of a slope to it, and it's on the top end of the slope. And it started to lose some of the leaves on the top side. And I'm wondering, is this drought or is it something I should be worried about, that emerald ash borer?
Well, it could be a couple things, David. It could be drought related. Obviously, green ash tend to prefer moist, semi-well-drained soils. So as it gets drier, and if it's kind of on the edge of the leaves, that's probably leaf scorch. The other thing to always look at on trees in general is if a tree is already having some problems, these kind of conditions will tend to make that stress come out even more. So one thing I'd look on any tree, if it's only been in a landscape, let's say 10, 20 years, is to make sure it has a good root flare and make sure it wasn't planted too deep in the soil. If it was planted too deep in the soil, you might actually be seeing some stress related to being planted too deep or actually girdling roots from below ground. They're actually starting to encircle the trunk. So look at some of those things. As far as emerald ash borer, we haven't found it in this location in Iowa yet. That doesn't mean that we don't have it. One of the symptoms that we tend to see is just general dieback of the top. The other thing is if the borer is actually in the tree, we might actually start to see what we call bird fleck or peck, where they actually start going after the larva into the trunk of the tree. So you start looking for those. They tend to attack the top, so it's kind of hard to see the actual exit holes unless you get up into the tree. But unless you're seeing major dieback, you may be seeing something more related to the weather.
Okay, is there something where I should just try to water it some more?
Kind of back to where we said, I don't think it – if you have the water and you can use it, it's on a tree like that, if it's a tree that's been in the ground, say, even 15 years or so – the water probably is not going to hurt.
Okay.
Nothing but
help.
Thank
you.
Uh-huh.
Thank you, David. David dialed 866-780-9100. You can also email us, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. John joins us from Waterloo. Go ahead, John.
Hi, this is John. I have a question about a windbreak that I planted 2 years ago in the spring. It consists of, there's two rows of arborvitas, a row of hackberry and a row of oak. And I'm wondering if I need to be watering it much. The trees seem to be looking good. The hackberries, the leaves have started to roll up a little bit in the heat. But I'm wondering if I need to be watering it.
How big were the trees when you planted them, John?
They're about 4 to 6 feet, the leaf trees were.
So is this their second or third growing season?
This would be their third summer.
I would say are you using weed control around these trees, like mulch?
Yes,
or?
I'm rounding around the trees,
okay.
About a four to six foot diameter.
That's probably got you where you're at so far. I mean, that's a great thing. And actually, if you can do that for a couple more years as those trees establish, I think that'll be real beneficial. If you can get water to them, since they've only been in there, if this is the third season, 4 to 6 feet where they bare root?
They were potted.
They were potted.
Yes.
If you can get some water to them, as dry as it's been, I think it could help. I definitely think, you know, they're in that, you know, we talked about 1 to 2 years or maybe that third year. If you can get water to them, it sure would help.
Yep, and how much water?
I would try to get about, on a situation like that, maybe 5 gallons a tree or so.
A week?
Roughly, yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah. All right, very good, thanks.
Uh-huh.
Thank you, John. Jane from Ankeny writes an email, I heard what you said about dormant grass. I have sod that was put in a year ago. Can I let it go dormant for a few weeks, or will it die sooner than other grass? I'm trying to cut back on the watering. I have an irrigation system, but don't want to jeopardize the life of the sod, Jane in Ankeny writes.
Well, if the sod was installed last year, it should be well established by this year. So I would assume that it could go dormant and still survive. Now, if you do decide to water the lawn, it's best to water it once a week and really do it well, where you put on maybe an inch and a half. If you want to do it more often, you could do it every 3 to 4 days, but put on maybe a half inch, maybe up to a 3/4 inch. But don't do it like every other day.
And let's go back to the phone lines. This is Horticulture Day on Iowa Public Radio. Andy is in Cedar Falls. Go ahead, Andy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have some coneflowers that are, they have almost a sprout coming out of the seeds. And what I've looked up is it's a phytoplasmic fungus.
Right.
And, Yeah, and it's really spreading to a lot of my purple cone flowers. I've taken up the ones that I've noticed, and now I'm seeing them on more. So am I going to have to get rid of all of my cone flowers?
Well, the question would be, is it aster yellows, which is caused by this phytoplasma, or is it actually caused by a very tiny microscopic mite? Both of those will cause the actual heads to be deformed and kind of greenish in appearance.
Right.
And so it could be either one of those two possibilities.
Okay, I did see the aster yellow also.
Mm-hmm. Right. So
do I need to get rid of them? I did see that it said I shouldn't compost because we don't want to have the fungus spread.
Well, if it's the aster yellow, that's caused by the phytoplasma. And once the plant has that, you can't cure it. It's a permanent thing, okay?
Okay.
And it's transmitted from plant to plant by a tiny sap-feeding insect, okay?
Okay.
And typically you would dig it up and destroy it because you can't cure it. Now, on the other hand, if it's this tiny microscopic mite, that is something that may not, that's not a permanent thing. So if it were that, then they might be perfectly normal next year. So
okay.
It could be either one of those two, either the mite or possibly the phytoplasma. What you may want to do is to send a sample to the Plant Diagnostic Clinic here at Iowa State where they can examine that.
Okay.
And what you could do is clip off maybe two or three of these flower heads, put them in a plastic bag, bring them down to the county extension office, request they send that to the Plant Diagnostic Clinic, and then they can examine that and kind of take it apart under a microscope and see if they can find the mite. You may also want to take some photographs of the plant.
I have a lot of photographs.
Okay. And include the photographs.
I was calling them my mutant cone flowers for a while. And
right.
I actually took a picture to a greenhouse, and they said they didn't know what it was.
Right. It's probably one of these two. And include some photographs. Now, the clinic does charge a fee of $20, but then they'll examine that and they'll get back to you and tell you what it is. But if it is the aster yellows, then you'll have to dig up and destroy the plants.
Okay. What about what about cone flowers that are planted elsewhere? Because it really seems to be localized in one of my garden areas. The other garden areas, I've been okay.
Well, the aster yellows is transmitted by a tiny sap-feeding insect. And
It's
very possible that if it feeds on the affected plants and then flies to the adjacent area, it can transmit the disease. So
it's going to spread.
Right. So that's why you have to dig them up and destroy them, because you can't cure them. But if you leave them, it could spread to other plants. And aster yellows also occurs on other plants, too. You can see it on, for example, marigolds, where they turn yellow. So it can spread to other annuals and perennials also. So potentially it could be quite a problem.
Devastating. Okay. I haven't noticed anything on my marigolds. I guess that's probably what I'll have to do is send some in, because it's upsetting. I have such beautiful cone flowers.
Right. I would, because if it's aster yellows, you have to destroy the plants. If it's the little mite, they might be perfectly fine next year.
Good luck with those cone flowers, Andy.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you. Andy dialed 866-780-9100 from Cedar Falls. We head to Cassville, Wisconsin. Fred is on the line. Go ahead, Fred.
I just had a question about blight on the tomatoes. I've heard there's no cure for it, but I was just wondering what you have to say, and I was wondering if there's something I can do, like in the fall, to prevent it for next year. I was thinking about throwing a bunch of stuff on the garden and burning it, trying to burn some of it off.
Now, when you say blight, you mean what? What are you seeing on the plant?
It's turning yellow, and it turns yellow and brown, and from the ground up it grows and eventually kills the whole plant.
Okay. So it could be some type of foliar disease, and we typically call those blights. And they're very common on tomatoes. They typically start on the bottom leaves. The bottom leaves develop typically these small tan to brown spots. The rest of the leaf turns yellow and then eventually brown, and then it works up. The best way to control that is to, when you have a plant that's affected like that, pull up the plant later on in the fall, remove the plant debris as best you can from the garden and destroy it, and then next spring look for a different site where tomatoes haven't been grown for at least 3 years. Because even though you clean up the area, there are still going to be spores on tiny bits of plant debris in the soil, and they can survive for typically 2 or 3 years. So you want to find a new site where tomatoes haven't been grown for 3 years. Also, when you grow tomatoes, if you can, make sure they're well spaced. Okay, don't crowd them. And if you have a indeterminate variety, grow it in a cage up off the ground. Anything that would increase air circulation and drying of the foliage. And finally, if everything else fails, you can use a fungicide, and you want to apply that at the very first sign of symptoms.
Freddie, you still there?
Yeah. Hello?
I hope that did that answer your question?
Yeah.
Tell those folks to hold on. You're getting some plant advice. That's top priority right now.
Right. Would that help if I, like, because I was told, like you said, it gets in the soil.
Mm-hmm.
If I, like, burn the top of the garden?
No, you can't. You can't. You know, some people say, well, can I go out with bleach and disinfect the soil? Can I somehow destroy the pathogens in the soil? No, you can't.
Okay.
Basically, they will die eventually with time, but you can't destroy what's in the ground.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Thanks for calling, Fred. Fred dialed 866-780-9100. We head back to Blackhawk County. Mike is in Waterloo. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi. I have a question. I have a 50-year-old oak tree, and it has a nice shape, except one limb has managed to grow straight out about 12 feet off the ground, and it's probably 8 or 9 inches in diameter, and I need to remove that. How far away from the tree should I cut that limb?
Well, first, Mike, I wouldn't cut it right now. I'd wait till this winter because of the potential with oak wilt. The other thing is, if you have a lateral branch on that big branch that's at least a third the size of the wound that you're going to make, you could cut back to that lateral branch. If you don't have that, then you pretty much need to cut back to the branch collar on the trunk. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yep, it does.
But I would definitely wait until till November till we get some good frost to do that pruning.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Mike, from Waterloo. We can still work in one or two more here before the break. Let's go to Fairfield and Rondi.
Hello?
Yes, you're on, Rondi. Go ahead.
I have a row of pyramidals, about 7 of them, and they're about 7 or 8 years old, and I think they're trickies, but I only have one that is just laden with tiny little pine cones. And it's even making the branches droop, and none of the others are doing that.
Okay.
Are these arborvitae you're talking about?
Yeah, arborvitae.
Okay.
And the variety Techni?
Yes, okay.
And so you have one that's just producing a lot of conelets?
Right. I did water it. I have been watering it because it looks a little bit more stressed than the others. The others look fine, but it's just even bending branches over because it's so heavy with those little pine cones.
Yeah, sometimes when plants are under stress, they tend to produce a heavy fruit crop, and maybe that one plant is under some stress, and so maybe watering that tree maybe every week or 10 days might be beneficial. But some trees, when they're under stress, will produce a heavy crop of fruit.
And the thing we have to remember is we were actually very dry last fall. And those cones were produced this spring, most likely, or the flower structure for those cones were produced last year.
Mm.
And that often is in relation to what the weather was last year, too, if that plant was already under stress. So he's right. That may be a direct correlation.
Now, would it be all right, should I just leave it alone with the exception of watering it every, 7 or 10 days. I'm wondering whether I should clip some of the heavy clumps off because the branches are bending.
Well, you could if you wish. It's not going to hurt to prune those off. It could be a little bit tedious, but you can definitely do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. Rondi called from Fairfield. Let's go to Deanne, who is near Hampton. Deanne, go ahead. Deanne, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh,
I
you
lost
may need
you
to
for
turn,
a minute.
May need to turn down your radio, Deanne.
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
I have a question about blossom end rot on tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
How do you prevent it?
Well, it's hard. It's typically very common, especially early in the season, and especially on the medium to large tomato varieties. The best thing that you can do is try to maintain an even moisture supply. Because what happens is when the moisture supply fluctuates from dry to wet to dry to wet, that tends to inhibit calcium uptake, and therefore the fruit don't get enough calcium, and then they develop this blossom end rot. So the best thing you can do is to water on a regular schedule when it's dry. I would say right now probably every 5-6 days. Really soak the plant nice and deep, and they should be fine for several days. The blossom end rot tends to become less often in August and September. So I would also pick the fruit that have this on it because they're going to rot anyway, and you don't want the plant wasting its energy on these rotting fruit.
Good luck with those tomatoes, Deanne. Deanne calling near New Hampton. We're coming up to a break. If you've just tuned in, this is Horticulture Day on Iowa Public Radio. Jeff Schmidt in for Charity Nebbe. More with Richard Geron and Mark Vitash after this break. And this is Horticulture Day on Iowa Public Radio. Jeff Schmidt in for Charity Nebbe. DNR District Forester Mark Vitash is here. ISU Extension Horticulturist Richard Geron joining the conversation as well. Plenty of phone callers wanting to get in with inquiries about their plants and trees. Let's go to Sherry, who is in Cedar Rapids. Sherry, you're on the air.
Hi, I have two questions. My first question is about a viburnum that I have, and it's been in the ground for close to 10 years, and it's always been beautiful, beautiful lace cap, white flowers and red berries. But the foliage is getting very sparse, and just at the ends of the branches, it's about 5.5 feet tall. If I prune that hard, will I get new growth?
Boy, I wouldn't do that at this point. It obviously is not in very good health. I would water that plant maybe every week or 10 days, really water it well, and maybe next spring, maybe fertilize it lightly with like a 10-10-10 fertilizer and see how the plant responds to that. But but pruning per se is not, I don't think, not going to save the plant. So I'd be inclined not to prune it.
So it's not like, it's not, it doesn't look like it's in poor health, but it's not like a lilac that you can prune hard and it'll come back.
Well, we do that basically to kind of rejuvenate the plant to make it smaller in size so it blooms well. But we wouldn't want to do that to a viburnum in most cases, no.
Okay.
You could prune out if you have actual individual dead stems that actually do die. It's okay to prune those out and kind of clean it up from that aspect.
Okay. And then my second question involves a lilac. I have one that's fairly new. It's been in the ground a few years. It's all about 3.5 feet tall, and it seems to be dying in sections. The leaves, they don't turn brown. They just kind of shrivel up, kind of dry up, and like it's like that whole branch will die. And the rest of the plant looks okay, and then I notice, and I cut it off, and then I notice another section is now dying, and I'm wondering if it's a soil fungus.
Well, it could be some type of disease. Again, if that plant is dry, I would go ahead and water that too. You may want to consider sending a sample to the plant diagnostic clinic here at Iowa State and see if they can diagnose the problem. At first, if you have a digital camera, you could take some pictures and send them some pictures and see if they can determine, based on the pictures, what may be occurring. So you could do that. Their email address is P as in plant, I as in insect, D as in disease, C as in clinic, at iastate dot edu.
Great.
And you could send them the photographs and see what they think. And if they're still unsure, they'll request an actual plant specimen.
Okay. Do you know if there are funguses that, like soil funguses that affect lilacs? Because I've had other lilacs in that same bed that have had the same problem in the past that I've ended up throwing out.
Yeah, plants, even lilacs, have disease problems potentially.
Okay.
They're pretty reliable, but they're definitely not pest-free.
Okay.
One other thing to look for, Sherry, is with this drought stress and stuff, we do get canker diseases, which are basically secondary attacks on stressed plants. And one thing to look for in the transition area between the dead and the live, look mm-hmm. to see if the bark is sunken or discolored or anything like that.
Okay.
And when you do send a sample, you want to send that portion too so that they can look at that to see if there's any potential canker diseases that also might be causing some of that dieback.
Great. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Sherry. Once again, Sherry dialed 866-780-9100. Let's go to Monica in Grinnell. Good morning, Monica.
Hi there. I'm calling about a pear tree that a friend diagnosed with fire blight, and we've been kind of aggressive about cutting out the dead parts,
mm-hmm.
but it just seems to keep coming back, and I'm wondering if it's just done for.
Well, fire blight can be hard to control, difficult to control. Pruning it out is your best option, control option. When you do that, make sure that you prune well below where you see the visible symptoms. I would
okay.
say at least 6 inches below the visible symptoms. And
okay.
after every pruning cut, make sure you disinfect the pruning tool, the pruning
yes.
shears. But if it keeps on coming back, it may be a variety that's very susceptible to fire blight, and it may be kind of a losing proposition. And
okay.
so you may wonder, you may decide that I've tried this, it's not working, maybe it's best to replace it.
Yeah, okay. It's been a couple of seasons, and yeah, it seems to just keep coming back.
Pear varieties differ in their susceptibility to fire blight. There are some that are very, very susceptible. There are others that are more resistant. So let's say you decide to replace it, then I would look for a fire blight resistant variety.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that may be what will happen.
Okay.
Thank you, Monica.
Thanks a lot.
Hey, we have an email here from Gwen in Waukee. I have been hand washing all of my dishes in plastic dish pans of dishwater and rinse water. I feel confident taking the rinse water outside and using it to water plants. Is it a bad idea to use the soapy dishwater for like plants, herbs, tomatoes, flowers, or trees?
You can probably get by that. I'm not sure I'd put it on the edible crops. But as far as the ornamentals, the flowers, the trees and shrubs, especially if there's not too much in the way of grease and other materials in it, if it's basically water and a little bit of soap.
There you go, Gwen. Let's go to Josh in Charles City. Go ahead, Josh.
Yeah. We're going to be widening our driveway just a little bit, and the one edge of the driveway is going to come up about 4 feet away from the trunk of our maple tree, and it's probably 70 years old at least, and that's right where it curves. The driveway is going to curve, and I'm essentially going to be cutting out maybe a little less than a quarter of the root system, and there's some pretty big roots. Is that going to hurt the tree?
The easy answer is yes. Yes, Josh, and what it comes down to is, you know, anytime you get over a quarter, or if you cut a major root or two, you are going to cause some damage. The question comes down to, again, how much damage is that going to cause?
Right.
That's hard to predict, but once you start getting up around 25%, that can be pretty significant. The other thing I would be very concerned about if you're getting that close to the trunk and those roots are that large, I would actually be worried about the stability of that tree once you cut those roots, Josh.
I was wondering that, too, that, because on the exact opposite side of that, it's kind of got probably one of the largest limbs on the bottom sticking out on the opposite side of that.
Right.
and also, you know, the root system is going underneath the existing driveway, and it's...
Is that all going to be basically ripped out then during that process?
Just the bad spots, because, you know, it is, as the tree's gotten progressively bigger and the driveway is quite old, it's broken up the concrete in those spots, and, you know, I'd have to dig those spots up and chop out the roots there, too.
Let me ask you this. If that tree was to fall... Where would it go, Josh?
It wouldn't go in the neighbor's house.
Okay.
it would fall at a southwesterly direction right towards the road.
Well, but, you really have to look if a significant amount of roots are going to be cut, you're obviously going to cause some damage to that tree. And the problem with damage like that is usually don't see the response for sometimes maybe 3 to 5 years. So you think
right. You
got away with it and everything's going to be okay. Then that tree can start to really show some decline depending on how much of that root system is damaged. But
sure.
My biggest concern again is going to come to safety is if you're going to cut a root that big or numerous roots that big, you are basically going to be creating a hazardous situation.
Sure, and there's probably three of them that are at least 9 inches across. You know, so they're good size.
I would be very concerned.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Thank you, Josh. Josh calling in Charles City. Let's go to Randy, who is in Coralville.
Hi, thanks for having me. You had a question earlier about established sod or sod that was planted last year. Well, I have sod that was planted this year in late May. I was wondering two things. One, how often should I water that sod? And two, there's brown areas, some that have obviously taken root and probably gotten dormant, and others that haven't taken root. And the brown areas that haven't taken root, is that completely lost, or will that come back with watering?
Only time will tell on that. If you can, what I would do, the ideal situation is to water once a week, if you can, put on an inch, maybe an inch and a half, okay, and do it in the morning if you can. Now, if that's not possible, then I would do it twice a week, about every 3 to 4 days, and put on half inch, maybe up to 3/4 inch, and try to do that in the morning. And if you do that, that should keep the grass nice and green. Now,
is there a problem with overwatering it?
You can waste water, obviously, which is expensive, and you don't want to do that. So some people do it like every other day, but they only put on small amounts. That's really not good for the actual turf grass plant, and you may have more disease problems. So you typically want to water once a week or maybe twice a week if you need to. Early morning is the best time, and if you do this for a couple of weeks and those brown areas remain brown, then I would assume they're basically dead because they should green back up in a few weeks.
And for the average Joe that doesn't know very well how many inches he's putting on
right.
the lawn,
okay.
How does that translate to time, say, time under a sprinkler?
What I would do is go to my local hardware store and buy 2 or 3 inexpensive rain gauges that you can push into the ground and then put those in the pattern of the sprinkler. And then turn on the sprinkler for maybe 30 minutes, and then go out and measure the water in those sprinklers. Take the average, and that's what you put on.
Okay, that sounds good. And can I ask you one more question?
I have a magnolia
tree that looks like it's half dying. The leaves are going brown, and they have fallen off the tree. Is that merely a sign of the drought, or is that something else?
It could be the drought. If it's occurring kind of throughout the entire tree, where it's a few leaves through the entire canopy, I would assume that might be due to drought. If it's occurring on just one branch where all the leaves on that branch are turning brown, I think there's something wrong with the tree.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Randy, calling from Coralville. Let's quickly go. Paul is in Mason City. Good morning, Paul.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question that's not drought-related. Maybe it's for Richard. I took a trumpet vine out of my yard about 4 years ago, and it continues to put up little runners and volunteers all over not just my yard but my neighbor's lawn.
Right.
And how do I kill the damn thing?
That is a trumpet vine, yes. Very, very hard to kill. At this point, the only thing you can do is to cut off those sprouts. Let them get up maybe 4 or 5, 6 inches tall. Then cut them off. And then get some Roundup. And you want to use the Roundup concentrate, not the ready-to-use. And pour a small amount of Roundup in a container. Then get a foam-type paintbrush. Dip it into the Roundup and then dab it on the cut surface. And you're probably going to have to do that for another, I would guess, 1 or 2 years, because the trumpet vine is something that is just very, very tenacious. It doesn't give up easily. So you have to be very, very persistent. But
wow.
Do you have any surface roots on this plant?
No. No, but boy, do I have a lot of volunteers.
Oh, I know.
You're talking a major project.
Oh, here. I know. Now, in the future, if you do that, what I would do in the future, let's say you have something like a trumpet vine you want to kill, I would cut it off about a foot above the ground, and then I would apply the Roundup directly to that cut surface. Okay.
That's exactly what I did to remove it.
And then I'd come back in a couple of weeks, cut off another inch or two, put on some more Roundup, come back in a couple of weeks, cut off another inch or two, put on more Roundup, and you're getting more and more and more Roundup into the root system.
Huh.
And I think that might be a little bit more effective. But at this point, since you don't have that, this is going to be basically applying it to the suckers. It's probably going to take another couple years, maybe longer.
Okay.
You're going to have to be very, very persistent.
Okay. Well, I will call you back in 3 years.
Good luck with that trumpet vine, Paul. Let's go to Larry. I think we have time for one more call. Larry from Waterloo, go ahead. Larry, are you there?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I have 3 Diablo 9 barks in my yard. One's out a ways from the house, and the other two are up close to the house, and they get this leaf fungus every year.
Mm.
The one away from the house doesn't do so bad, but the two that are side by side up close to the house get leaf fungus every year.
Mm-hmm.
The leaves kind of, they almost look like they got bird crap or something on them.
Yeah, I think it's powdery mildew. Well, what you might consider doing is maybe digging them up and moving them to a site where they get plenty of sun, a lot of air circulation, and see if that's going to help. Sometimes it does. If it doesn't, I think I might consider replacing them with something else.
Okay.
It's a fairly common problem, but sometimes if you move them to a better site where they get plenty of sun, where they get a lot of wind, good air circulation, sometimes it's much less severe.
Okay. Well, that seems to be what it is, because the two that get it the worst are on the east side of the house. They only get the morning sun, and they're up close to the house. The other one's out where it gets sun most of the day.
Yeah, right.
On the south side of the house, away from the house, and it gets a lot more air circulation around it, and it doesn't seem to get it as bad.
Correct.
Larry, good luck with that. We are at the end of the hour. It always flies by. Mark Vitosh, DNR District Forester. Mark, thank you.
Thank you.
Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist. Richard, thank you again.
You're welcome.
Charity Nebbe is back next week. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese and Emily Woodbury. Technical assistance today from Allison Sullivan and Jason Burns. Thanks for joining us.